Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to a special edition of March Madness Men's Basketball here in New Orleans at the Final Four. On this special edition of our show, I'll do sit-downs with all four Final Four head coaches. You'll hear from Hall of Famers, Mike Krzyzewski, the head coach at Duke, Jay Wright, the head coach from Villanova, Bill Self, the head coach from Kansas, and in his first year, coaching at his alma mater, Hubert Davis. So we have an all-blue blood Final Four. Well, I know some people would like to say Villanova's not a blue blood. Look, they've got two national championships since 2016, been to the Final Four in 09, 16, 18, and 22. So in the modern era, and they got blue in their uniform, Villanova is a blue blood. New blood, whatever you want to call them. We got four blue bloods here in the Final Four. And it's kind of crazy because in this NCAA tournament, there was a lot of chaos. St. Peter's a 15, getting all the way to the Elite Eight. And yet, here we have four blue bloods playing for the national championship. And the last time that we were here inside the Superdome, it was in 2012. That's when Kentucky and Anthony Davis knocked off Kansas and Bill Self. So it's been 10 years since we were in this building. That was a great team that won a very good Final Four. And whoever wins this one certainly will go down as one of the better teams that has won the national championship in recent memory. Of course, one of the major storylines, if not the storyline, this is it for Coach K, his last Final Four, 13th, going for his sixth national championship. So let's start it off with Coach K, the legend, the Hall of Famer, in his last Final Four. I was at the Duke-UNC game at Cameron, and you were pretty clear that that was not the end. There was still more work to be done. And you guys have had quite the last couple of weeks. What changed since that game to now?
Well, I think we learned not just from that game, but the ACC tournament. We won two games, lost to Virginia Tech in the championship, but we didn't play. We weren't playing very good basketball for a four-game stretch. And actually, we weren't able to practice that much because we were on the road so much at the end of the regular season, 8 out of 11 games. So we went into the gym and worked. Our kids took responsibility and were accountable for the good and not so good, and we got better. And then best way to get better is through achievement. And then we played a really good Cal State Fullerton team. Well coached, they really played good defense and beat them. And then Tom Izzo's Michigan State team, they played lights out basketball against us. And in the last 5 minutes, we were able to turn that game to our side. And that gave us momentum against Texas Tech and Arkansas.
Defensively in San Francisco, you guys played great.
Yeah.
You know, especially Mark Williams inside. What also, you know, went to that next level from, you know, whether it's Carolina or Virginia Tech, those losses in these last four games?
Well, our on-the-ball pressure, initial pressure, was one of the things that we were not doing. And we inserted Jeremy Roach back into the starting lineup, and he's our best on-ball defender. And so it started to pick up with that. And it also meant that other guys were off the ball more, and they were more comfortable in off-the-ball defense. And we started talking more. You know, when guys are comfortable, they talk more out on the court and when to each other, not to an opponent. And that's the lifeblood of a defense. So it just seemed that with a couple minor changes, some bigger things happened.
You, more than anyone else, know the value of getting to a Final Four, your 13th Final Four. And you've always done a tremendous job of making sure each season is about each season,
right?
Not the past. But when did you know that this group had it in them to still get to this point?
When we first started practice, I knew we had talent. I didn't know if we would be able to be mature enough. Not because they're immature, but because they're 18 and 19 and had not experienced anything. I felt in November when we won against Kentucky in Madison Square Garden and Gonzaga in Las Vegas. I mean, those were two of the top games this season. I said, wow, you know, our guys were not afraid. They could really play. And then we had some interruptions. We had a huge interruption with COVID for about 10 days. You know, 30 people in our program, 11 players got it. And that set us back. And it took us a while to ramp back up. But we had no serious injuries, and that's helped us.
You know, it's crazy. I think it caught us all off guard that Duke has never played Carolina in the NCAA tournament, let alone the Final Four.
Yeah.
You know, there's been chances where it almost happened.
Right.
What's your overall thought that this is finally happening in your last time when it could happen? Here it is in the Final Four.
Well, I think both of us are deserving of being here. And that's what makes our conference so good, too. There are a number of teams that are deserving every year from our conference to be in. And since in the history of the ACC, the two of us have been probably deserving more than anybody because of what we've done. It is ironic that we've never met in the tournament itself. And I do think, because we're usually good seeds, really high seeds, any seed in the NCAA tournament is good. But if you're a high seed, then you're going to be not put in the same region as someone from your conference. So it probably took winning a region in order for us to play one another. I mean, that's the only way. I think if you figured it out, that would be pretty much why it happened.
So what does this rivalry mean to you?
Well, the rivalry itself, besides just this, not just this game, it's a great game, really benefits college basketball and college sports at the highest level, because you bring together, Roy Williams and I would always talk about that, two of the great universities in America, two of the blue bloods, two of the winningest programs in the history of college basketball. And as a result, you're always going to have good players. You know, the coaches are good, but the players are exquisite. And the group that's going to be on the court for both teams are just the same. You know, we have some of the best players in the country in both of these programs.
What do you have to do differently against them this time that you didn't do in that second half at Cameron?
Well, I didn't think we played real smart. Our defense, and they are a very potent offensive team, but we did not challenge them on our defensive end. And they had freedom of movement, and they just played better. And even with that, you know, we had a chance. And then I didn't think towards the end we were very smart in playing against them. And in order to beat good teams, you have to be smart.
What's been the most challenging part of this season, your final one?
I wouldn't say challenging. I've had a lot of health problems, not where I have had COVID and that, but because of the condensed schedule, you know, sometimes you're playing 4 and 8 or on the road and that a few times I've been kind of knocked back, and I'm not used to being knocked back. You know, usually boom, 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 but probably it means that I should be getting out. So I think it's a good decision.
And to this point, what's been the most memorable part of this season to this point?
The fact that for me personally, I set out wanting it to be, I'm just going to coach. I'm not going to recruit. I'm going to make the most with my guys this year. And I've pretty much been able to do that. You know, a lot of people have said, you know, it's a farewell tour. It's not set up to be a farewell tour. It was set up for continuity, you know, so that John could move seamlessly into his program. And I think that's what's happened.
And lastly, I remember when we talked in the preseason, you told me what it meant to you to walk out at Cameron.
Right.
What does it mean? Because this is your last time. What does it mean to walk out at the Final Four in these giant stadiums when you know you're coaching in the national semifinals, 70,000 plus, millions watching? What's that feeling like?
Well, it's a good question. And when we had our first practice here on Thursday, when you walk out, I actually told my team, you know, you have like an hour and 40 minutes. I said, we're not going to do anything the first 5 minutes. Just go out on the court, bounce the ball, look around, you know, and thank God how lucky you are, because you're one of only four teams to do this. So I didn't think I was following my own advice, but I was. I walk out, and there's the stairs to go up. And it brought back the memory of Indianapolis, where the most beautiful scene I've ever had in college basketball was walking out in 2015, and there's 70-something thousand people. And I say, holy man. And I got that deja vu moment again, so I'm looking forward to having it in person.
And who will take on Coach K and the Duke Blue Devils? Well, it's North Carolina. The last time these two teams met, it was in Cameron Indoor Stadium. The last weekend of the regular season of men's college basketball, Carolina went in there and won, avenging a blowout home loss. And here's what's crazy. It is the first time ever that these two schools, these unbelievable rivals, have ever met in the NCAA tournament. They're doing it right here in the Final Four. So let's hear from Hubert Davis, head coach of North Carolina. So, Hubert, let's look at the season, first of all, overall.
Yeah.
There's been some crazy scores. You guys had some wide margins.
Yeah.
The Pitt loss. And then the last month, you guys have been playing your best basketball. How do you describe the arc that this team took?
Well, I do think it's an arc, but I don't think it was a big arc. I mean, you know, we won 28 games. And so, but at the, you know, the beginning of the year, we really struggled against Kentucky and against Tennessee. At the beginning of the ACC regular season, we had some lopsided losses against Miami and Wake. And but we found ourselves. And that's one of the many things that I love about this group. It's been a group of perseverance, a group of resiliency, a tough group that has always bounced back and gotten back up. And that's something that I had clearly communicated to the team throughout the entire season. And over the last 2 months, the togetherness, the health of this team has been an all-time best, and we're playing our best basketball. And there were a number of teams at the beginning of the year that were playing extremely well. They're not playing right now. And so I like where we were. We just continued to grow, and it was a year of newness. You know, that new head coach, new coaching staff, transfers, freshmen, new players, tweaks, pivots, changes in terms of how we play on both ends of the floor. And I think it's just shared experiences over time that has allowed us to be at this point. And it's so beautiful to be here in the Final Four and having a chance to win a national championship.
This team also, I feel like, has played great in these sort of, for lack of a better term, almost game seven environments. Because you guys had to play in those in that last part of the season. Especially at Duke, I was there for that. And then so far as in an 8-9 game, I mean, no easy games to get to this point. And then you got to try to knock down Cinderella in St. Peter's. Why has this group been able to handle those pressure-packed sense of urgency situations?
I think our team has done a terrific job at turning down or turning off the noise. And we talk about that all the time. Is that you have to turn off or turn down the noise from the phone, family, friends, and fans. And you have to focus on what is real, and that is our preparation, our practice, and our play. And one of the things that I've given them this Bible verse so many times this year is Proverbs 4:25, and it says, look straight ahead, ignore all sideshow distractions. And I really believe this group has embodied that verse and has done a great job at focusing what is beneficial and helpful for us to be the best team that we can be. And so in pressure situations and big time games, these kids have been able to step up and deliver, and we find ourselves here in the Final Four.
How did you block out those distractions?
That's easy.
The enormity of this job, taking over for Roy Williams and
you know, going to Coach K's last game at Cameron. How were you able to do that?
That's easy. I've done it my entire life. It's the way that I was brought up. It was reinforced at North Carolina. I did it with ESPN. I did it my time in the NBA. I never read the newspapers, never turned on the TV, never put myself in a position to react and read and to hear other people's opinions and just focus on my job. And so as head coach here in the first year, my job was to prepare this team to be the best that they can be on and off the court and in the classroom, and anything else was insignificant to me. And so the things that I have done this year, my first year as head coach, are things that I've done my entire life. And I wanted to be an example to the players of how to turn out that noise and to focus on what is real. And that part has always been easy for me.
What does Duke Carolina mean to you?
Excellence, consistency, the highest level. College basketball is at its best when Carolina and Duke are really good. And it's interesting that, you know, the last time that we were in the Final Four together was my junior year at Carolina in 1991. And so we were playing Kansas and Duke was playing UNLV and they ended up winning. That was Coach K's first national championship. And to think so many years later, now I'm involved as the head coach against Coach K and Duke and Carolina again. I just, in his last year and my first year, is perfect.
Played so well against them at Cameron.
We did.
How do you do it again?
Well, I mean, one of the things that we did in the second time against Duke is we took care of the basketball. We've always, you know, we've identified what allows us to have success. When we get after it defensively, when we rebound the basketball and take care of it and limit our turnovers, we can compete and beat anybody in the country. And so during that stretch towards the end of the year, we were checking all those boxes. In that game, we took care of the basketball, we rebounded, and we played really good defense. And that put us in a position to be successful on the offensive end. I've never worried about this team offensively. We can score in many different ways with Armando and Brady and our guards with RJ and Caleb. It was all on those three areas. And if we can do that again, we'll be right there on Saturday night.
Two last things for you. One, the emotion in that locker room when Armando hugged you after that game, where did that come from, do you think, from him? That he was, I mean, he just let it loose on your shoulder.
You know, for Armando, he came to Carolina to be a part of those moments. And in the first two and a half years, he never had any of those moments. You know, the first year that he was here, we had a losing record. Obviously didn't go to the NCAA tournament. There was no tournament because of COVID. Last year, we got crushed by Wisconsin in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And he's never had those memories, those experiences, those stories in a Carolina uniform, things that he hoped and dreamed of. And that's the thing that I'm most proud of, or one of the things that I'm most proud of, is our guys are getting their own stories, their own testimonies, their own memories of showing up big in big time situations with the Carolina uniform on. And that's where that emotion was coming from. Armando was all those hopes and those dreams, not just a hope and a dream, but a reality. And it all came out after back in the locker room.
I've always said you have the best laugh and smile. You have a great laugh.
I like to laugh.
I loved it when we worked together.
I'm a positive guy.
Yes, I love you. To this day, you're still one of my favorite people.
Positive.
And I loved it. And then after the game against St. Peter's, the other emotion came.
Yeah.
The tears. Where did that come from?
It's been an unbelievable, great year, but it's been a long year. It's been so busy. A lot of people ask, you know, how do you feel after this? How are you feeling after that? And it's been so busy. I haven't had a chance to feel. I haven't had a chance to process anything. It's always next game, next practice, next recruit, next interview, next something. And when the guys were coming off the court and the last few seconds and realizing we were going to a Final Four, it was really the first time in a year that I had been able to think and just to process and take in what is just happening. I just started crying. And I always tell the guys, in order to play at Carolina, in order to play for me, you got to have emotion. And I love emotions because that means you care. And it just came out. And just to think about all the things that we had gone through, that we were going to the Final Four and these kids were going to have experiences that I got to experience at Carolina, I just couldn't stop crying.
There's a smile. Love the smile. Thanks, Hubert. The undercard, which probably is not fair to these two teams, is Kansas taking on Villanova. First game, you have a 2 seed in Duke taking on an 8 seed in North Carolina. They're not really an 8, but yes, they played to an 8. And now we've got a 2 seed in Villanova taking on a 1 seed in Kansas. Jay Wright's been here before. In fact, 2018, his Villanova Wildcats knocked off Kansas in the national semifinal en route to the national championship. Let's hear from Jay Wright. Jay, first off, Justin Moore had surgery for the Achilles. 2 years in a row, you've been down this road with a major injury to a key player. How are you navigating this, knowing that you got a chance to win a national championship without one of your most important pieces?
I hope by game time we all get over it. It was strange after the game against Houston, the Final Eight game. We didn't really celebrate like you normally do because there was a pain in our heart. You know, we just all felt for Justin. And as the week goes on, we're getting better and better with it, as he is. But he's such a big personality on our team, such a force on our team. I don't think we're as worried about making up for it on the court as we are feeling really bad about him not being able to be a part of it.
A year ago, you had a little bit of time to figure out how to play without Colin. How are you trying to do this in literally days?
Yeah, I think having a week is pretty good. You know, normally during the season, you have a couple of days. Now, last year, we had a few weeks without Colin, but I think we had a good weekend this week. You know, it's the end of the year where we kind of know what we're doing. We're replacing Brian and Arch in that spot. Caleb goes into that spot in the starting lineup. So it's not that much tactically that we've got to change.
The fact that Colin came back, you know, almost better than ever. I mean, what did you anticipate he could do after a knee injury like that a year ago?
You know, you always hope for the best, and you understand it's probably not going to be there, but if you get close, you're okay. And I hope for the best, and this is better than the best. I mean, you know, Big East Player of the Year, which is hard to do. When you're the preseason Big East Player of the Year, it's hard because everybody's coming after you all year. He handled everything incredibly well. He's playing at such a high level, and he still has the mindset of a winner and not like a guy that has to prove himself after an injury or a guy that has to prove himself for the NBA or prove himself as Big East Player of the Year. He still plays like a winner, doing anything it takes to win a game.
You scheduled for a team that you thought potentially could do what it is doing.
It never works that way.
But here's the thing. You didn't win those games, but you played really well and you were close. UCLA, Purdue, Baylor. What'd you learn from those games that catapulted this team to ultimately being a Big East champ in the tournament and then a Final Four appearance?
When you make that schedule and you play those difficult games on the road, I think we had the least amount of home games of any Power 5 team or Big East team. And you don't know what – you know it's going to be – there's going to be a lot of positives. You worry how bad are the losses going to affect you. But playing the Final Eight game against Houston on the road – in Houston was almost like our game at Baylor. And it hit me that, you know what, this is going to pay off. We've lived this, and we've lived it in Texas. That Baylor environment was incredible, and that game in the Final Eight was a whole nother level, but we were ready for it. So there's situations like that. Pauley Pavilion that night was rocking. It was the tough environments against the tough teams, the well-coached teams, I think, that really prepared us for this tournament.
Defensively, in that Houston game, they only scored 44 points. What are you most impressed by your defense?
Our ability to rebound against them. I was impressed. You asked me most impressed. I was impressed with our ability to guard their guards, but the ability to finish the possession with a rebound was even surprising to me because they were the best offensive rebounding team we had seen all year.
2018, I know different roster, but you've seen this program before in this environment. What do you remember most of that semifinal?
We shot the lights out. It was one of those games. I looked down at Bill, and I hope I'm not in this situation, and just flat, I felt bad. Because sometimes you have that night where you just make every shot. Creighton did it to us this year. Baylor did it to us this year. You hate to be on the other end of that. And we just happened to do it in a Final Four game.
Look, I don't think anyone makes up the definition of what a blue blood. There's no arbiter. As far as I'm concerned, Villanova is a blue blood. You want to come a new blue blood? I don't care. This is yet another Final Four for you. 09, 16, 18, 22, two national championships. When you think of where you've helped put this program, blue blood, not blue blood, how do you define what you've done?
I don't know if I'm ready yet to define it, Andy. I think at the end, one day I'll look back and I'll let you guys define it. I really think you guys do a good job of that. I'm not good at that. I'm always looking at next day. Like, what do we have to do next? And I enjoy that, you know, and rarely look back. But in today's age, you know, with media, you are forced to look back a lot, which is fun. But it's not as much fun as looking forward. Like, what's the next step? What's the next challenge? And that's how I look at it.
So how do you explain how this program has become one of the best in the country?
I think continuity, you know, of having our staff and our former players as a part of the staff, and our players stay for 3 and 4 years. You know, some of them two, but generally 3, 4 years passed down the corporate knowledge each year. And you got guys like Colin Gillespie and Jermaine Samuels and Demir Cosby Roundtree who were on that national championship in 18, like to experience all of this and be able to prepare the young guys for that really helps.
You know, I think back to our time in that Mohegan bubble last year, okay? And then the bubble in India. And now this, and what you talked about, great crowds this year. How much did you miss this environment?
When you were in the bubbles and playing last year, you missed it. But you didn't know how much you did until you felt it this year. Madison Square Garden this year in the Big East tournament, I felt like it's always electric on Friday night. And it was off the charts. Our game, like every game, first round games in this NCAA tournament were magical. Usually first round can be a little quiet because there's so many teams. But not this year. It seemed like everybody wanted to be there. Everybody wanted to see every game, be a part of everything. I can still feel it. I can feel it here at the Final Four.
To beat Kansas, now obviously you said you have enough time to adjust without Justin, to some degree. What must go right for Villanova?
A number of things. When you get this deep in a tournament, you can't just pick one thing on a team. Like we're going to have to be good in transition defense. We're going to have to be good rebounding the basketball. And we're going to have to be really intelligent offensively against an outstanding defensive team that can switch all positions. So I'd say those three areas.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
And to wrap up our coaches' convos here on March Madness Men's Basketball, Bill Self, the Hall of Famer, trying to win his second national championship. First one was in 08 over Memphis and John Calipari. This is his fourth Final Four. So Kansas, Bill Self, taking on Jay Wright and Villanova. Here's my conversation with Bill Self. Bill, I was in Chicago. That was as much of a flip of a script as I've seen in quite some time. First half to second, completely different. What happened at halftime to win that game against Miami?
I think really what happened was the last possession of the first half. We sub KJ Adams in, a freshman that hasn't played much, and we tell him to guard Gusty and he challenged him where nobody else had challenged him in the first half, it seemed like, and had a great possession. And I told the players at halftime, it's amazing. A guy can play 29 seconds. He's better than any of you guys in the game, you know, for the entire duration you played. And guys came out the second half, and we were turned up. Not that we didn't intend to be that way to start, but it was a different team. And we put DeJuan on McGusty and said, just don't help. And we were able to limit them to some poor shots, and then we were able to get out and run.
You know, a couple players that have had pretty interesting seasons in different ways. I mean, Ochai Agbaji, Naismith Finals, the only one still playing at this point. And we talked about this in Chicago. If you could just go over his arc of from the beginning of when he was going to redshirt and was not going to be the player he is today. How did that happen?
Norm Roberts, my assistant, told me I need to go check him out because I didn't know anything. I mean, this is embarrassing to stay. He's 50 minutes from us, and I didn't really know anything about Ochai. And his AAU team that he played on was so loaded. You know, he was a good seventh or eighth man on his AAU team. And I go watch him, and I'm thinking, well, he's got a good-looking stroke, and he's athletic, and can put it down two bounces and smiles all the time. People seem to like him. You know, why wouldn't we take him. And because he's rated like 350 in the country. And I didn't know ratings went that high. And so we get him committed and gets on campus. And well, he's better than what we thought, but he can't help us this year. So we're going to redshirt him. And then we had some stuff happen with our team. And about halfway through the season, I went to he and his family and said, you know what? I think this would be good for us. And I wouldn't bring him out unless I thought he could be a contributor. What do you think? And they said, heck yeah, do whatever's best for the team, the best family ever. And so we bring him out. I don't start him the first game. I start him all the games after that. And he's probably our second or third best player. And then a little bit better as a sophomore, a little bit better as a junior, but not quite good enough. And then he took this NBA pre-draft stuff very seriously and learned a lot about himself and his game and came back. When they say people work hard, he takes it to a whole different level, Andy. I've had some, I mean, the Frank Masons, the Devontaes, the Josh Jacksons. I mean, the guys that we've had that you would consider to be workers, I can't say any of them could compete with this. He's just on a mission and got off to a great start in New York, as we know, in the Champions Classic against Michigan State, and was able to maintain that. But he hadn't played his best, you know, in the NCAA tournament. So we're very optimistic that he's going to have a bust-out game.
So Remy Martin comes in with tons of hype, Big 12 preseason player of the year when he hadn't even played a Big 12 game. Obviously, you knew and coached against him at Arizona State. Knee injury, things are going sideways, and now he's had this magical march. He's the Midwest Regional MVP. What changed in terms of his ability to perform at that high level?
You know, Andy, I don't really know. He came into our place a totally different person and mindset than what I anticipated. When we took him, I had guys on my team saying, "Coach, he never passes the ball. He shoots up all the balls." And I'm like, "No, he doesn't. You know, that's not how we play." He came here, and I had to talk to him, saying, "Remy, I know you want to get others involved, but your unselfishness is becoming selfish. Because you don't even take wide open, it's wide open looks. It's best for our team if you shoot the ball." I'm serious. He three practices he wouldn't score, uncontested layups, always wanting to pass it. And I'm like going, I know you're not going to play this winning game. And then we play Michigan State off the bat, and he has a pretty good game. Doesn't score the first half, gets 15 the second half, and he's starting to figure it out. And then he's just kind of up and down, and then he gets hurts his knee in December. And Andy, I didn't know how good this kid could be up until that point. And after he hurt his knee, he lost all explosion. I mean, it was just a knee bruise, but must have been painful enough that he couldn't explode. And you take away Remy's speed, you know, you're taking away a big part of his game. And he kept telling me, I'll be ready in March. And I said, yeah, right. And so he practiced one day, not practiced the next. He'd look good one day, and then. Next 3 days, he couldn't really do much. So I really wasn't counting on him. And then right before the Big 12 tournament, he said, "I'm ready to go." Because I said, "Let's just hold you till you get healthy." And he labored the first couple of games back, as anybody would. But once we got to the Big 12 tournament, he's a different guy. And he gives us something that we desperately need. He gives us personality, but he also gives us a guy that can run crap offense and come away with 2 or 3 points. And we really needed that.
2020. You guys had a chance.
Yeah, we were good. We were good.
I mean, that gets taken away. Mm-hmm. Last year, obviously, is an anomaly for all of us. How sweet is it to be back here knowing that, you know, there was a chance you could have competed for a title a couple of years ago?
You know, in 2020, what made that team good is no matter how good the other team's best post player was, our post defender was better. Udoka Azubuike was a National Defensive Player of the Year by the NABC. And no matter how good your perimeter offensive player was, our perimeter defensive player was better. Marcus Garrett was the National Defensive Player of the Year. So we had two National Defensive Players of the Year on the same team. I guarantee that's never happened. And from different polls. And then you still had a second team All-American in Devon Dotson playing. So that team was poised and ready to make a run. But, you know, as it got taken away from everybody. But that was probably about one of the best teams I've had since I've been at Kansas. And then last year, even though we got our tails handed to us by USC in the second round, I mean, they deserved to win the game. It wasn't even a good game. I had two starters with COVID, you know. So it was just a situation that we weren't able to give our best. And the year before, we weren't able to show everybody, you know, validate what we've already shown people. And so I think the guys are a little bit more juiced about this tournament, you know, in large part because of the way the last two have gone.
2012, it's the last time the Final Four was in this building. You lost to Kentucky. It's crazy to think about it. That was that long ago, 10 years ago. What do you remember about that final in this building?
It was that team that we had that year got behind double figures every game. So it was like a game didn't start until we were behind 10. I mean, if you go Purdue, NC State, Carolina, I mean, and then Ohio State, I think we made a layup at the buzzer to go down 13 at halftime. And so we come back and we win that game and we got Kentucky. And even though we could have gotten them that day, that was a special team Kentucky had. You know, we got behind big early and came back and cut it to four or whatever and made a three, but they called walking, which was a good call to take it away. So we at least put some game pressure on them, but they were the better team. What I remember most about is how that team maximized who they were. I was really proud of that group. And that's kind of where I am on this team too. Even though, you know, ton of ball left, at least I hope so. And we're playing a team that's obviously gotten the best of us the last couple of times we played in big games. And they're so well coached, but I still feel like that this team has another gear they can get to. Now Villanova doesn't like letting anybody play to that gear and they're so good at it. But I still feel like we've still got our best still in us.
This is an emotional year for you, obviously. You lost your father at the turn of the year. How have you navigated this year without your dad?
Yeah, we've had some distractions, but the way I look at things, and this is how he would look at it too, everybody deals with distractions. You know, right before he passed, I was with him, and he said, "Are you going to go coach?" And I said, "I don't know, Dad." He said, "Yeah, I know. They pay you to do a job. Go do it." I mean, that was his mindset. So I was away from the team for a while and with some different things. But one thing about a team that's close is players sense when they need to pick up the slack. And even though my guys are, they're ornery, they're pains in the rear end, they're all this and all that. But when they sense something, they know this is a time that we kind of ratcheted up and they did that. They propped me up and carried me through a period of time during the season. And even though we weren't always great or whatnot, but they sensed kind of what was going on. And I'll always think fondly of that because I probably wasn't prepared to lead them. They needed to lead themselves at that moment.
One last thing. I just want to, you know, the expression, just load the wagon. That your dad always said. What does that mean?
He always told us, "Don't worry about the mules; just load the wagon." Matter of fact, when we got inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame, and I know you've been there, they have the lead in into the building with some marble kind of facial, I don't know what you call it, inscriptions, and then everybody had their favorite quote next to it. So I'm out there with, you know, Coach Krzyzewski and, you know, Coach Williams and all these people and Jay Wright, obviously, and everybody's got their favorite quote. And it's, you know, it's Teddy Roosevelt or it's, you know, President Kennedy or, you know, Nelson Mandela or whoever it is. Mine is from my dad. "Don't worry about the mules, just load the wagon," which is a very country thing to say, but that's where he grew up. But it just means to us, don't worry about things you can't control. Just focus in on what you can control. And it's a big deal to us because the school's kind of taken it and run with it. And they sell T-shirts all over town about just load the wagon and everything. And my mom, it made my mom really proud because that was something my dad lived by.
And that'll wrap up this edition of March Madness Men's Basketball. After the national championship game, we will have reaction to the national title on Monday night here at the Final Four in New Orleans.
As always, all our content lives on at March Madness MBB on Twitter and social media and NCAA.com. Big appreciation to our team led by Abby Stoltz at Turner Sports, Bleacher Report, and of course, NCAA.com. Thanks for listening, everyone.